Good evening, everybody,
Good
and
evening.
welcome to our semi-regular Wednesday stream. We're back on a Wednesday because that means our guest Harry can join us. Say hello.
Well, I was going to say, it's not just you are sometimes also streaming with other people on a Wednesday anyway. But
yes.
There's a league match on, so I can't play snooker tonight, and it's pissing it down. So I need something else to do.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry. I'm here.
You're going to have to pronounce it with either an M or an N in it. Maybe even a B if you're feeling a bit fruity.
What?
What if I instead say good evening?
Oh, this is a hair blow environment.
This is the hair blowing. That sounds like you've got a cold, though, hair blow.
I need to insert a nice a dash of maturity into the proceedings this evening, gentlemen.
I thought we were I thought we were all fellow retards here.
I know. This is the solidarity we had.
Solidarity.
Oh. I thought we were autists. Oh. Autists can take things seriously from time to time.
I'm afraid that autism is a
when
form
we
of retardation.
When we hyperfixate on things, things get very, very serious.
Anyway.
Hello.
Yes. we are back at a different time because it's nice to have guests on every once in a while, and we should have some other guest stuff coming up at some point soon.
On Monday, actually.
Yes. We'll get past all the really important intro stuff. It's pissing it down.
Oh, yeah, the weather report is it will not stop. It's been pissing it down for the past 18 hours continuously.
Yes.
You know, like people say, oh, it's been raining for 18 hours. No, it has been raining continuously, heavily, for like 18 hours.
It is a cracking day to be sitting next to a fire and a wet dog in a pub drinking a crisp pint.
Arr.
As you watch it just sort of
in
barrel
Swindon,
down
it's not
the
actually
window.
Raining, shockingly.
Ugh, ugh.
God, you've got it all going for you, haven't you?
Yeah.
Not that it makes Swindon any better.
No, well, there you go, then.
If you want to support us, the best way to do so is via the Ko-Fi. We are also still fully monetized on YouTube somehow.
It's because we love the nation of Israel.
Well, that's why, yes. But, mystery solved. It's because of our deep-seated and eternal love for the nation of Israel. But because of that, we are still monetized, and you can become a member. You can send super chats, super stickers, all that good stuff. So, yes, we will be answering your questions throughout this, but we just thought we'd let you know where to support us. You can also support us on the Anti-Politics Substack, a bit of which we'll be going through a bit later.
Yes.
Actually, probably in a few minutes, because it's in the intro. But we do have the Substack, which I will be doing a big update on at some point. I've had just had real trouble with the Substack backend for some reason.
Hmm.
So we'll be getting you updated on that. But yes, Harry, we are actually here because of a secondhand complaint I got from you. But
wait, it's all his fault.
it's all Harry's fault. Yes,
yeah. It's my fault.
It's your fault. No, you posed a very interesting question, which is it's very frustrating because a lot of people will vacillate between saying that the global elite are completely incompetent or completely in control, whereas it's both. It's a very strange circle to square. But I know you had a bit of a what would your question be, and what would your question mark be over the role of the quote unquote global elite, or as we'll call them, the ruling elite sometimes.
So to lay this out, this was a discussion that I was having with Spoon. Who evidently has passed that conversation on to you, the duplicitous South African bastard.
I know he was asking me the same question, to be honest. So
yeah, I thought that might have been what it was. Spoon, you're probably listening to this. I love you. So my discussion that I was having with him was that in the streams that you and AA and others within our sphere can do, when it's discussing the ability of the regime to contain right-wing energy, it can come across as though the elites of the regime are able to exercise an all-encompassing control of every aspect of society, where they're able to adjust dials, make phone calls here and there, send out messages that mean that everything is constantly surveilled and constantly under control. And I do think that that is, when it comes to maintaining their own power, probably how they operate. They are very, very good at maintaining their power using Machiavellian and cruel means. But when it comes to basically everything else, our elites seem to me to be complete retards. And I say this because...
Not the good kind.
Not the good kind. They're still evil, but they're really stupid whilst they're being evil. Because to me, it seems that they just make basic mistakes. So the thing for me that prevents me from seeing them as purely 150 plus IQ Machiavellian geniuses is that they couldn't get HS2 done. A simple infrastructure project in Britain to create a stronger link between Manchester and London. Just a simple network link where it's going to be a railway line, a faster railway line. I think even then would have only shaved off about 5 minutes off of the journey. They were unable to get that done due to massive amounts of corruption and overspending. And of course, back in the day, our elites were just as corrupt, but the corruption sped the process up and actually got things done quicker. Whereas now the corruption, the corruption just means that we don't get anything nice. Everything is constantly falling apart. And now the link between Manchester and London is going to be a link between Birmingham, London, which already exists.
It would seem
and
so.
My local area absolutely destroyed itself because where I'm from, Crewe, was going to be one of those places that was linked on the HS2 line. And the local council destroyed everything in the town so that they could try and make sure that it was prepared for having Londoners coming through constantly on their daily commute because they can live further away from London and commute there every morning now.
Okay, so we can probably go back to HS2 as an example as we go on as well.
Yeah, and it's not going through there anymore. So now the entire town, the town centre in particular, is completely barren. There is an enormous pile of rubble and a car park that nobody parks in that because nobody's ever there that is now closed most of the time. So I can't bring myself to think that these people are evil geniuses when they can't get something that simple done. And part of me also, I think we can all agree that the reasons for the immense demographic change that happens within the country and the West in general is can be very, I don't know if you want to say ideologically driven, but ethnic revenge driven in many ways by the people who've been pushing it on us. So I see that as also, obviously they've got their own reasons for it, but it seems to me to be somewhat of a mistake if you don't want to generate dissent within the nations that you're governing. Because the best way to avoid dissent, as far as I can tell, maybe I'm being naive by saying this, would be to not demographically replace the natives of your country and instead just govern them competently. Perhaps I'm being naive there, but I'd like to hear your takes on this so far.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered first that help us disaggregate out who actually are the elite.
Yes.
Because, of course, we could have a body of 20 or 30,000 members of the civil service and the bureaucracy that are literally dribbling retards, whether they're from here or the third world. But these people do not make the fundamental decisions in regards to the actual coherence of what is the elite class above the elected class. Because I think we've all come to a point nowadays where we recognise that it's not about MPs and what MPs want to do. And what, say for example, you're talking about HS2 there. Of course, MPs think HS2 is simple because they just think they throw money at public works and then all of a sudden they appear like magic. Solving the engineering problem of HS2 or the power supply problem or the logistics side of even having the materials and the assets to do it, I don't think it then becomes so simple. I think part of the thing that we're really bumping into, and I think this is part of the reason, not necessarily why there is always feigned competence where there is incompetence or vice versa, is that fundamentally we're bumping heads with the reality that you cannot run a mass complex society at the scale that we are. I think it has to eventually collapse in on itself. And the systems, and either in an abstract sense of government or in the realistic sense of business or government services, they were good and they worked, but they operate at such a scale and such a density nowadays that I don't think they can be physically improved. The situation cannot get better. It can only get worse.
A large problem that our current ruling elite has is what I call, what I refer to as the inheritance of the grand old house. The West is a grand old house as an entity. Germany, Western Europe, you know, Germany, England, Western Europe in general, the UK, the former empires, came from a very, very high point. And really what we've seen is that that takes a very long time to degrade and collapse. Mm. And that if you look at the situation they are in, they are trading on the old resources, the old expertise, the old infrastructure.
Prestige.
The prestige. Yes, the prestige of the old world. It is, you know, a house doesn't collapse overnight from lack of maintenance, nor does a civilization. You can have a beautiful old house inhabited by incompetent people and the house won't fall down immediately. And I think that's what we're encountering here. Mm. Is that there is this mix of competence and incompetency, or at least from an outward perspective, and it's very difficult to understand where that comes from without understanding the relationship between the people involved and their relationship with both power and the resources they are given to manage the state.
Well, I think as well, if we can get to one of the sort of first examples I wanted to bring up as well, we might as well get the Burnham quote in here as well, because it's just it's an absolute topper.
This is just a quick section from your Coming Through Libertarianism article, isn't it?
Yes, it is. People think about this term competency and incompetency in a vacuum. Fundamentally, politics is not a vacuum. And this is, I think, a great way of contextualising this. Burnham says, power politics is the only kind of politics there is. The idea of some sort of politics that would not be power politics is empty, self-contradictory. When someone condemns power politics, it is a sign either that he does not know what politics is about, or that he is objecting to someone else's power politics while simultaneously camouflaging his own. So it's a competition. It's a zero-sum game. There is no we win, you win, everyone wins version of politics that happens in a liberal democratic state. That's just a complete fabrication. So as a consequence of that, we can conclude a body that exercises political authority must maintain and grow its power through technical means, through subterfuge, blackmail, or just outright force and violence, yes, brute force. Otherwise, it is an authority in decline. A soon-to-be subsidiary of some other growing power. Now, when we turn around and go, oh, the US elites that run the global hegemony are so incompetent, where are the competent class of elites who are going to topple them?
Yes. As we put here, that there is no such thing as a completely incompetent regime, which is kind of our starting point. In that, well, they are not completely competent, but they also can't be completely incompetent.
Because somebody else would do it.
Yes.
This is this human instinct for power and will that exists in a certain subset of people who have the propensity to be leaders or possibly even great men. In some capacity. Sorry, on you go.
So this is a question really of where have the elites min-maxed their resources?
Kind of, but also possibly an investigation into where is their competency that's hidden? Because I think that for us particularly, when we look at what other people say about it and they just sort of defer back to this point that they're all stupid, they're all hopeless leftist communist retards and it's all going to collapse and bio-Leninism says so, blah, blah, blah. But the number of times you just peel back, you know, the first or second layer of paint in these kind of arguments, you begin to find that, wait, there is a baseline level of competency here and there are a lot of things that could be very easily improved. It's just either the improvements of them are not being discussed or they're being deliberately hidden because there is some other purpose or some other use in essentially looking weak at a moment. I mean, you can never mind politics or Paul Gottfried's idea in the therapeutic state of the American state making itself look subject to these different ethnic groups and multiculturalism instead of being honest about the fact that it imposes multiculturalism on people. Because then it would be asked to deal with it. But if it says, no, this is imposed upon us and we are weak to it, then they get to negate the accountability to a certain extent. You know, when you are strong, look weak. When you are weak, look strong. It's...
Well, the first kind of broad area to look at when trying to break this down into manageable chunks of trying to figure out how competent are the elite, you have to talk about who the elite are, And we predicate stuff here on Elite Theory. We're not going to re-explain Elite Theory to people. We're not going to explain to people why democracy doesn't work and why we don't believe in it. Kind of go and read The Populist Delusion.
I was actually going to say, if not, also try and access a speech from Wetan 2022 and the octopus.
Yes.
Because what we're describing here is kind of the octopus, that there is a wider elite class, the cathedral or whatever you would like to call it. But ultimately, to understand how this machine works, you have to disaggregate it into the think tanks and the universities,
yes,
the media spheres, the money spheres, the legal spheres. These are all different, unique bits of the elite class that as a whole work together, but in a sense also have their own little unique place in a hierarchy.
We've got Starmer and Rayner there with their, you know, with their donation friends, their rich friends on the boat.
That's them in Monaco.
Yes, it's them in Monaco. The Harry, you have quite a lot, I think, at this point of personal experience with this, though. When you meet people, when you meet these people, you know who they are and you know who is and isn't on the inside. If you want to get used to it, often within minutes.
Do you mean through my own personal experiences of meeting certain people who may have come and visited on the podcast? I don't really interact much with some of these people. I have interacted, of course, with some people who have been involved in NGOs, but I never have gotten the feeling that some of the ones who have come in have been the big fish.
Oh no.
The sorts of people that I have interacted with, if that's what you're getting on with here, have always been kind of small fries.
But you can tell that a lot of even the bottom rung of these people, they see themselves as part of a group, as part of a class. They interact in a network with each other. Often in ways...
Certainly, I'm privy to... I shouldn't say too much, but I am privy to certain networks that are trying to form and already have formed at the moment through certain connections that I have through my job. I shouldn't really say more than that. I'm sure you understand.
I understand, yes.
But it's basically the WhatsApp mafia. Everybody has a WhatsApp group. We see it through all of the Tory WhatsApp group messages that are constantly getting leaked, like the ones where people are leaking at the moment, where Kemi Badenoch is being a sassy bad bitch.
Is she being brat?
She posts the doing her nails emoji quite frequently.
Oh,
in the ones that have been leaked.
Oh, yep. The MV nails.
Tell me this isn't true.
This is true. You can find it yourself. Search it within your heart. It to be true.
But before we get too far, do you want to quickly read a couple of donations?
Yeah, we've got a couple from Coney Current Year, who sent us a 10 quid. Why haven't Britain and the EU elites realised that call centres aren't as economically useful to a nation as steel foundries? Because it's not just about fighting a kinetic war.
They don't think they're going to actually.
Really. HS2 stream when? No, because I don't think I could actually be.
I don't think I could stomach that.
No, I like a little bit of dry analysis, but that's a bit much for me. Lamented Guide.
I can give one fun thing about HS2.
Oh, go on.
Because I've done a little bit of work on it in the past, mainly through some people that I know have posted big threads on it on Twitter. Literally going through the hundreds of pages worth documents of how HS2 was being broken down in the management and where the money was going. For some reason, 60 grand of the funds that were going to HS2 were donated to a Bengali old folks charity.
Well, it's just a bargain, so they can probably get some sort of old folks home. They're probably living in.
It also might just be like a weird DEI thing. Who the hell knows? I see that as well all the time with the way that public money is managed. And it isn't.
But
it
yes, isn't managed. Lamented Guides also sent us $10 and some sort of weird super sticker.
Thank
of
you
like
for
chicken
the
jumping little,
chicken, I think.
Or whatever the hell's going on there. Yes. And Chancellor Chieftain has said, I apologise for my absence, have a Canadian fiver. I think we'll just about get a half
We might get a feetsins out of that, the Canadian...
Oh no, we'll save that for Monday Madness.
we'll save it for Monday Madness.
But yes, I think there is one point you're getting at here, which is, one, the elite is disaggregated and does not act as one whole body.
No.
But there are a lot of people who participate in it, even at a low level, but and essentially almost being initiated into this thing as like a school or a secret club to a certain extent. They all have a feeling of solidarity and they all know that irrespective of certain factions of elites that rival with one another, that when push comes to shove, they do all have each other's back.
Yes, they do. But a lot of the, as you've encountered, what I refer to as bottom-rung elites, they don't feel like elites. But a lot of the time, all these people... Yeah.
They certainly don't.
No, they really don't. But you look at their background, they all went to the same schools, they know the same people, they did internships in the same NGOs and think tanks. There is privately imbued within them a class consciousness of a ruling class, and a level of initiation tends to separate them.
I add to this?
Yeah, go ahead.
As well, because the ruling class, recognizing themselves as such, also recognize themselves as something that now, especially due to the mass communications technology and travel technology like airplanes and such, recognize themselves as a very global class.
Mm-hmm.
So I often consider the question of why is it that they seem, with certain nations like England, to have relegated themselves to just accepting that they are managing the decline. Why is it that they don't seemingly care all that much that local towns across the country have are completely destitute and filled with nothing but foreign businesses, which are fronts for human trafficking and drugs trade? And I think to myself, well, it's probably because of the fact that they are cozy enough within their within the upper echelons of society that they feel for the moment that they are completely insulated from the consequences of these actions. So as long as they are still in positions of power and wealth and comfort, they don't give a shit what happens to us.
They just don't care.
Yes, this will be one of the running themes throughout all of this, in that the elite can be hyper-competent, hyper-intelligent, and in certain aspects hyper-motivated, but simply do not care about large swathes of the necessary management of the societies that they are supposed to be managing. That is one of the great tensions at the heart of managerialism, is that the managers simply do not have incentives to care. In fact, they have incentives not to care. And this, you might get sick of me repeating this at some point, but this is something I'm going to try and hammer into people. Sometimes it is not incompetence. Sometimes it is not evil. It is a simple lack of caring and a simple lack of effort.
And there's a lot of very simple mechanisms I think they can get away with this as well. If you think about, say, for example, you're mentioning, you know, X specific town that is now dealing with, you know, say a Turkish, a Pakistani criminal network that has set up a number of fraudulent businesses and is using these possibly as drugs fronts, is using these as grooming fronts, who knows what else. But that becomes no longer the responsibility of the national politician, to a certain extent, because he's got to look at the bigger picture. That can't be his concern, because he's got greater powers for greater purposes than X little village. And at the same time, the parish councillor, or whoever is in charge of this little village, doesn't have the power to deal with the problem.
No.
So you've got someone who's got the scope, but not the power, and someone who has the power, but too much scope.
That is one of the things you run into. They are as well, like old world aristocracy, there's a degree of heritability there. We see a lot of political dynasties still, but without the honesty of an open ruler-ruled relationship.
I would say the thing is, nowadays we have dynasties that are beyond political. What about the financial dynasties?
Yes, that's what I mean. We have very obviously a facsimile of an old world aristocracy, but one that is hidden. And then that is kind of folded into the conspiracy. But it is very clear that this is a class of people. The question I would pose to you, Harry, is where do you see the biggest tension lines? Because there is inter-elite factions and rivalry, and there is some scope for disagreement and competition. Where have you seen kind of the biggest, or what you can identify as kind of inter-elite tiffs in your travels?
I mean, it really does seem to be the at the moment, the geopolitical sphere of who do we support more? Do we support Israel more, or do we support Ukraine more? And this seems to be something that's transatlantic, where the Americans want to support one side more, the European elites want to support the other side more. Of course, we all love Israel here.
This is our problem.
Can we get some love for Israel in the chat?
Yes. This is ultimately our problem with the stark division between internationalism and Zionism, is that Why can't we just respect Jews of all races and Jews from all places?
Yes. Of all backgrounds.
Well, why do we need...
Jews of all religions.
Why do these Jews need to fight each other when...
all of the lost tribes?
Yes, you know.
But
if Kanye can be a tribes member, as he claimed to be, then can't we all?
Yes, of course. But I think, though, within that, there is still something to be considered, which is that in the media... and on surface level politics, we constantly see the internationalist sort of Jewish types and Zionist Jewish types constantly knocking lumps out of each other. It's GB News taking the piss at a Hope Not Hate, and then it's Stand Up to Racism showing up at a Tommy March and all this sort of shite. But then on the deeper sort of background level, in the judiciary and in the halls of finance, where decisions are not made publicly, these people have each other's backs.
Yes.
Irrespective of what they believe about Bibi Netanyahu or the legitimacy of Israel's border or how much they believe the people of Gaza are suffering, when push comes to shove, they will all back each other.
Yes, the elite acting as a class and having shared class interests help mitigate conflicts and help them stop them escalating that might shatter the power base of the elite in the immediate term.
I suppose in a certain sense, they're actually performing a very clever function. By having these sort of moderated levels of rivalry throughout the whole hierarchy, they have the ability to constantly purge out useless factions, like woke is now.
Yes.
And I can't believe there is anyone who spends any amount of time viewing the news and news media around politics with a straight face that can't recognise the fact that woke is very obviously being cycled out as a sort of top-line faction, so that now it just becomes a sort of stinky jobber, anti-Semite, funny pink hat, tranny person in the corner that we all laugh at.
Well, this is something that I've actually observed today. I previously wasn't as heavy on the woke as being put away, but I do get the sensation now that it is mainly forces on the right who are trying to maintain this idea that woke is still at its peak. I will say that I do think that some of the institutions of DEI, which you could say were a result of woke, will be sticking around in some companies, if only because of the fact that they've put people through hiring practices into positions of hiring other people, gatekeeping. But the big corporations were always meant to gatekeep in the first place. But this was an incident that happened over the past few days, as there was this police body cam footage. You might have seen it on Twitter, where a police officer shot a large black woman who was coming at him with a knife, and there were loads of slop accounts being boosted by Tommy Robinson and Elon Musk himself that were claiming that BLM, you know, that completely irrelevant dead organization that nobody has cared about for years, had been trying to gin up a hoax saying that she had been murdered by the police officer purely because of the fact that she was black. I can't believe that the police would do this. Another case of institutional racism. I looked into that, and all that Andy Ngo, who was the one who originally made the claim in his thread sharing all of this, all of the proof that he had was six screenshots of complete and utter nobodies that he claimed were in Antifa saying, oh, this was a murder. I looked through everything else, there were no screenshots of BLM, nothing on their website, absolutely nothing whatsoever to show that BLM had said anything about this.
What you're saying is those wise and kind people at places like Radio Genoa and all these other Twitter pages, they might be misleading us and making woke seem like a bigger issue than it actually otherwise is.
Bum bum ba.
I know. Big shock. And just to remind everybody, BLM is a completely irrelevant organization post-2020. They served their purpose and then they were ditched immediately, and Patrice Cullors is now making weird nude gold portraits.
It is strange that, well, it's very fitting that where we see the most visible conflict between the elite, supposedly, is also at the most meaningless issues.
Yes, of course.
There's also a lot of, and to answer your question about HS2, having worked on it, everyone's worked on HS2, but I worked specifically on some of the building services, yeah. But a lot of what we see really in terms of how the elite class treat each other is there's a lot of pettiness, and because of that, there's a large amount of waste. The unaccountable manager status the current elite has over public money incentivizes a lot of waste, often for very petty reasons or based on a lack of feedback from reality. Crucially, it is not their own money that is squandered, so it does not have an exhaustive endpoint, barring national bankruptcy. HS2 is a great example of just the deleterious effect of being a public utility. The beaching cuts and the British Railway since the, you know, in-out, shake it all about nationalisation, non-nationalisation since the 1950s in some cases, has created a system where really that they don't care because it's not their money. It's this infinite pot of public money. And so they're having this infinite argument. No matter how competent people are, there's no incentive structure there. And as we talked about before, the elite as a class are more competent when they do what we call meshing the gears. Would-be power brokers within the elite class are most effective when they attempt to demonstrate their agenda aligns with the multiple factions, as you talked about, within the elite, the financial class, the security states, the political class, all those kind of people. There is a degree of internal rule by consensus, with the hard power centers intervening only when needed to course correct towards the ultimate goals of capital P power. The permanent post-war agenda is like a tide that carries all the current elite along in the direction that was determined to be best for us 80 years ago. And also, as we've talked about, the maintenance of power is the main focus of the elite. They are most effective when they feel their immediate interests are threatened, especially the interests of hard power, in quotes. The brutal and sometimes unimaginable outpourings of death the free world is prone to punctuate a status quo that is boring and confusing even to those inside the elite. The way I've heard it talked about is it's like a local council meeting that goes on forever, but like once a month someone comes in and like shoots somebody, but no one explains why, and the council meeting keeps going.
Well, this is what I take as, in certain respects, like the code word that populism has become now essentially means.
Yes.
It is a sort of knee-jerk reaction to the realization that they're steering a ship with no rudder that's barreling towards an iceberg that's on fire.
We've talked for a bit here. To posit you a question, Harry, speaking of all of this, you can go on, you can add a bit to it. I was
going to come to what I thought was quite a pertinent point there. I've now kind of lost my train of thought, but yes, I always think of it in the voice of in the sort of terms of Matt Goodwin. They are doing what they need to do and what they see fit so that the rise of 1933 does not happen again. And that is the crux, I believe, of what populism is, of what competent, sensible government, or whatever you want to call it nowadays, is this notion of not actually changing anything, but just keeping everything appeased and contained as need be.
I thought you'd finished there. Now, the question I was going to posit you, Harry, is, having spoken of all of this, the biggest problem that the current elite seems to have is one of succession. They understand this problem, but they don't seem to quite have got to grips with it. The example we've used before is this one from Klaus Schwab and the WEF saying that surrounded himself with nobodies and has no clear successor. And this is, I still point to this as the most extraordinary article put out by a mainstream media outlet, and it's by The Guardian, because it just has this naked admission of how power works. And this was basically an announcement that I got pretty good confirmation of, really, that Klaus Schwab had been put on the outside. So in terms of the power of the current ruling elite, my question to you, Harry, is do you see a generation coming up after these people, or do you think that when kind of the Klaus Schwabs, the Tony Blairs, and the Hillary Clintons of this world all pass on, the last kind of the transitional silent generation and boomer people, do we simply see just a massive loss in their ability to wield power?
That's a very interesting question. I can't really provide any kind of definitive answer. What we're doing here a little bit is we're making observations from the outside and observing observing what we have been allowed to observe. So from what I can see, there are definite factions and groups who are emerging underneath those who are in power right now, who are attempting to position themselves as successors. In the US, we have in the US and the UK, we have the technocrats, the Elon Musk and Teal Sphere. They definitely want to position themselves as potential successors. to power, especially now that Elon Musk has ingratiated himself in with Donald Trump and actively endorsed him. If Donald Trump does get in come November, that puts Elon, who already has a ridiculous amount of money tied up in government contracts with the US anyway, it puts him in an even greater position of power to put his friends into key positions and keep them there. So I do think that there are people positioning themselves within the US. In the UK, it's more difficult to tell because I think we can all agree that for the past few years, the UK political scene has seemed like a complete clusterfuck. It's very difficult for me to get a read on exactly what is happening because our elites, outside of moments where they can come together and coordinate effectively like they did at the other end of the Southport riots, where they were able to put together that enormous media campaign to make it appear that the public opinion had been decided and they said no to racism. This is an officially anti-racist country. Outside of that, I do see and I know of factions within the Conservative Party, made up of the younger Conservatives there, who are trying to put themselves into positions where they could inherit the party and turn it around and turn it into the real-based Tories. I have very, very... I have reservations over how successful that will be. It's a similar thing with the Reform Party. There are younger factions within that party that want to position themselves to be the successors to Richard Tice and Nigel Farage. I don't know of the other factions within the party personally. I would imagine that Tice and Farage have their own favourites that they would want to pass the party on to that do not align with the more sensible style of governance, shall we say, that the people that I know would want to implement if they were to get in charge of Reform and then somehow manage. That's the best answer that I can give. Not really much of an answer, sorry.
Oh, it's fine. You actually provided a very good segue to our next little section there, which is there is a degree that all three of us have seen a little bit behind the curtain. And when I've heard, especially from government departments and people very much on the bottom end, ministerial aides, people who do scut work, is what they describe is, in quotes, this phrase, a lack of bandwidth has been used multiple times when describing the situation at the Foreign Office, the Home Office, and a large part of the Westminster machine. It's a management speak phrase to describe a lack of competence and resources within the public departments with seemingly infinite budgets. They are classic work examples of public sector maximizing price and minimizing productivity, which, keeping in mind that managerialism is effectively a giant DMV or job center, it is inefficiency incarnate. You can't print competence.
I know, and that's a simple point that goes all the way back to Mises, back to Rothbard, back to Hopper. If you have no price mechanism for running a service or the wider collection of services that is government, you're constantly incentivized to make it more expensive, the expense of providing less.
Yes.
Because it just makes your job easier. And I also think to a certain extent, this kind of routes back to the previous point. So much, I think, of the day-to-day stuff that would have been handled by members of or tertiary organisations under the British government, even as recently as the 60s or the 70s, aren't being handled nowadays because the people at the top who would give some level of direction down to these people, I think, are concerned so heavily with the question of succession, and as they would be if they are consciously thinking themselves as a class. I almost wonder in a certain extent where in the way that they've used, shall we say, the image and the presence of certain people as something to carry on past their own life, say like a Ruth Bader Ginsburg or whatever.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yes.
Or a Queen or Joe Biden or whoever else, that they might just purely rely on framing an illusion to keep up the sort of notion that any of this actually even exists anymore.
We will get onto that later, but yes, one of the finer points that we've tried to discuss is that people are in power because you believe they are in power, but also people are in power because of the functions that they do.
Yes.
There's these two aspects of it. There's the people who you believe are in power and who you empower through that, and there's people who you don't see who are the vast array of cogs who, when you speak about kind of Richard Trice and the political succession, what really happens and what really does guide the day-to-day experience of people in Britain is just, it's the really boring parts of the permanent bureaucracy. It's mid-level managers and officers you don't even know exist.
Oh, I was going to say, and I'm going to pick an issue with an expert you've got in this little sort of note sheet we're using here.
Yeah.
You say, the current ruling elite, through resource mismanagement, is simply failing to do the essential functions of state in favour of pet projects, the clearest example being the Foreign Office. Now, I get to a certain extent what you're suggesting there, but I also think in another regard, and you know, I'm going to be sympathetic to the elites here. If the resources you have to manage is the low 65 IQ Bomalian Deliveroo driver, and they can't get people like that to be competent electrical engineers or systems managers or design engineer or product. That's not an issue of mismanagement. It's that what's under them and what they used to be able to rely on as almost their own little secondary power base doesn't really exist.
Well, that's because of mismanagement. They've mismanaged.
But that's not our elite's mismanagement.
No, it's
that's the previous elite's mismanagement.
Yes. Oh my God. This is why it's such a hard subject to talk about. I don't know. Save us, Harry.
I agree with everything you just said there. Yeah, the people that they are. I think, again, it's difficult for me to see it from a position of pure power politics when I think that there was at least some level of delusional ideology, never again, global citizenry, propelling all of this forward. Because, I mean, maybe it was just that the previous elites knew what the consequences would be and did it anyway without care for the without care, which is probably a big part of it. But also, I do think within some, that they do genuinely believe that people are interchangeable units that can be managed on a spreadsheet and shifted from one country to another, and that you will get the same results if you put a load of Bomalians on into an English village as you would if a load of Englishmen stayed in that village, and they are butting up against the harsh reality of that, and perhaps are not willing to accept it yet.
The Klaus Schwab article we talked about is such an interesting one because it kind of tackles this question in that it portrays Mr. Schwab and the WAF as a competent power holder, effectively a internationalist king who has filled his court with idiots. And that's so they can't threaten him. Idiots that won't basically politically assassinate him.
Well, that's what Tony Blair does.
Yes, and that's what people like Tony Blair do. What you see is what we like to think about the apex elites, the people who exist above and beyond party politics, but most of them don't. What you've got, elite overproduction and the bottom rung has created this giant sprawling welfare system for the minor elite. Journalism, NGOs, and the bottom rung of Westminster politics all function as effectively welfare for 18 to 25 year old cousins, nephews, sons, lesser loved sons and daughters of quote unquote elite figures. Hegemony plus elite overproduction equals a massive sprawling of these minor elites and a widening and flattening of them as a class.
Well, and just the general hierarchies we'd expect to have in society.
Yes.
So it becomes its own, in a sense, its own little consensus decision-making system above a bigger consensus decision-making system above a bigger... And you get to a point whereby the main filter does become the ideologies and ideas that we talk about and engage with.
Yes.
Because that tends to be the only signal that comes through the wider noise.
Yes.
And I think part of the thing that we have done with a lot of our research is we've sometimes deliberately not focused on the signal because we want to know what's in the noise. Because it's in the noise sometimes that you actually find the more intriguing bits about the reality of, once again, where competence really does and really doesn't lie. and what events are, say, for example, security elites in Britain actually willing to take it upon themselves to tackle through hard power, and which ones would they rather dilly-dally about with soft power because they believe it's expedient not to act?
You know, in Britain, Harry, how it feels like we're being constantly overrun by idiots.
Yes, and as a result of that, the country is constantly getting worse and worse and worse.
Yes. The elite class, from what our research, is experiencing the same thing as they undergo elite overproduction, and they've undergone their own revolution of mass and scale.
Mm-hmm.
They are drowning in their own idiot cousins.
This is a common point from elite theory about the deterioration of the elite, and I think also C.A. Bond might make mention of it in Nemesis as well, where he talks about after a certain point, the elite will mainly hire for loyalty rather than competency, mainly so that they can make sure that the people below them do what they ask and don't threaten them.
Yeah,
and there is a point where loyalty overtakes competency to such an extent that everybody is useless. They're trying their best. They really want to do what you've just asked them to do because they know that their job depends on it, but also they're retards.
Yes, and I would go even one further there. I would say that now that we have such widespread political sort of engagement across the entire populace, that this sort of conservatism for the specific regime and society we have nowadays is not just seeped through maybe the civil service or middle managers in certain jobs, but right through to the even people who are unemployed, student activists who...
Yeah.
In no way, shape, or form really gain anything from this regime bar basic sustenance and living, but because there's such momentum around it, they can't help but fall into this sort of conservative position of, well, I don't like them, but we've got to support it the way it is because we couldn't dare have anything different.
I think the current elite as well function because they let a lot of different groups of people eat. Here is our... We like to pick out certain people as examples or exemplars of certain things. And we've used the case of Katie Coulthorpe before, but she is kind of like Matt Goodwin is a great example of the politico NGO think tank cuckoo in right-wing circles. Someone like Katie Coulthorpe is the perfect example of the bottom-rung elite, of the sewn-up nature that hegemony means hegemony. So this is Lee Anderson. He was in the Conservative Party at the
time. Extremely based, Lee Anderson. Yes. He's so based and revolutionary.
I think he jumped from Labour to Tories, then Reform.
Yes.
But here's his saying, Katie works for me. She is single and earns less than 30k. Rents a room for 775 a month in central London. She has student debt, 120 a month on travelling to work. Saves money every month, goes on foreign holidays and does not need food banks. Katie makes my point very well about...
What point is he trying to make here? I don't pay my employees very well.
Well, the point he's actually making is that he doesn't need to pay his employees because staff member on less than 30k used by Tory MP Lee Anderson as argument against nurses needing to use food banks went to a £33,000 a year private school and is the daughter of a decorated army veteran, Brigadier Coulthorpe.
Can we go back to the Lee Anderson tweet for a sec?
Yes. Impressive.
No surprise that she's single. She's got like that old internet meme, like obsessive girlfriend physiognomy.
Also, if this
I don't know. So some of the audience, some of the chat is saying would.
No,
that's because chat's the anti-horny stick. Desperate creature.
Can I just say that there are...
Those empty glasses of wine with the stains in them in the office.
Oh, dear. Mr. Anderson.
The only thing is...
He works with Farage now, and Farage has been caught out being naughty quite a few times.
As has Michael Gove, in a different way.
I was going to say, at least he didn't take a shot from the different end of the room where the condom box is sitting on the wall.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
But yes, your fundamental point here is that there, irrespective of the fact that we are a liberal democracy where anyone has the opportunity to go from the bottom rung of society right up to the top, and there is infinite opportunity, blah, 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 that fundamentally the people who end up working in these unworkable lower elite positions, I mean, this is fundamentally
deliberately unworkable,
is that you could not be Johnny Appleseed off the street, earn £30,000 a month, £1,000 a year, living in central London, and make it all work. It just wouldn't. But because Katie Calthorpe is, was it granddaughter of such and such brigadier?
No, she's the daughter of a brigadier, and she went to York School, which is, I believe, one of the most expensive schools in the north of England.
But what you're seeing there is someone who is probably not very good at their job, because at the end of the day, Katie Calthorpe being good at her job doesn't matter. It just matters that
she's a woman, we could already tell.
Well, yes.
It just matters that she is in that position and not somebody else.
Yes.
And that's literally it.
Yes.
There's no more to it than that.
Well, one of the problems the elite class seems to have at the moment is that you can go from the most prestigious private school in Britain to one of the worst, one of the lowest rung jobs in Westminster politics.
But it doesn't matter because you're initiated.
Yes.
But you're in.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. That is not a demotion. It's a great sign of really how sewn up the whole thing is. Or at least this is kind of one of our perfect encapsulations that shows you the archetype.
And I think as well also shows a tendency among a lot of these lower level apparatchiks that they actually don't want power. They want the illusion of power. They want the social prestige of having power. But actually having power and accountability, delegating and manifesting it when it's needed, is something that most of them just don't want to do. So I think in a lot of situations, power ends up falling into the hands of sometimes strange and unexpected people. And I think that's why we end up with so many outcomes that on the face of them don't make sense. Because the people you're told are making the decisions aren't doing so. And the decisions that are being made are completely irrelevant from the people who should be involved in it. And it just ends all a bit of a confused mess. This is the noise, I think, that we try and decipher sometimes.
Well, it seems reasonable, and it seems that this might be something with... We brushed over it briefly earlier, the local council situation. Mm. As well, you mentioned that maybe the council member wants to make a change in their local community but doesn't have the power to. In my experience with local councils, they are made up of the most petty, incompetent, busybodies in your community, because who else is going to run to be a member of your local council? And I've recently learned, I won't say where from, but I am aware in Stoke, the local council has begun packing in dozens and dozens of migrant children who shouldn't be in the country in the first place into primary schools that are already at capacity, and the local schools do not know how to handle all of these extra students that they're being that's being forced upon them, and the council does not care. And I think the council is made up of incompetent busybodies and also people who do genuinely believe that they can virtue signal their way into the good graces by just embracing multiculturalism and pushing it onto. And honestly, a lot of the councils as well are probably starting to, in the more multi-ethnic areas already, fill up with people who are basically just importing their own family into these areas as well.
We all saw, what was it, Reform Chair for Hounslow and somewhere else at their local, not surgery, what would you call it, for local members meeting or whatever it was. And I think basically every single person in the room, bar about four or five, were either Hindu and wearing a turban or some variant of like...
Sikh. I believe.
Oh God!
It's the
don't
base
remind
Sikhs.
Me of that.
Don't you like the base Sikhs?
It's totally Sikh, bro, isn't it?
Don't mind being replaced as long as they're Sikh. Tommy Robinson says they're all right. So
especially if they're
now?
Illegal, because then they're brave and they believe in British values.
British values.
British values.
British values.
They only got on those bloody dinghies because they love our liberal values.
They love British values.
You get on a dinghy?
You've got to love them, eh?
This thing is, I can't find it.
I don't know. You probably find it if you scroll through my feed.
Do you know who
else
got on a dinghy? Captain Cook.
Captain Cook on a dinghy. True. Yeah.
Well, I've got a Christopher Columbus dinghy.
it's a big
Marco
dinghy.
Polo dinghy.
Yeah. Irving and Mallory as they went up Everest dinghy. You know.
Ah, here it is. Yeah. Here it is.
Ranulph Fiennes dinghy.
Well, that's why he lost all his fingers.
This image,
toppled.
This image is great, though, because as you zoom in on it, as you pan across it...
It's the Council of Elders.
The council has decided your fate.
You will be replaced.
It just... The woman in the corner.
Oh, she looks a bit confused. She stepped through the wrong door into the wrong meeting, didn't yeah. she?
But
the council has decided that you will not redeem.
Even in areas where people are well-meaning, there is this concept in electoral politics, and especially in small-scale electoral politics like a council, which is political capital. It's a nebulous idea, but it's an important concept when looking at the actions of the elite. They are very cautious about what they decide to do, often neglecting difficult but important areas that expend political energy but do not immediately benefit them. There's infinite political energy to solve the far-right riots, but not to stop an explosion in low-level crime.
Sorry, I know you're reading an important point here, but can we please get the Browns off screen?
I'm letting people soak it in.
I'm practically marinated in it. I wish to see no more.
You wish to see no...
I'm in Swindon right now. Presumably okay, Browns. I'm away from home. I'm already soaked in the stuff. Oh, yeah. I'm enriched enough. Damn it.
But the point I was going to make is that to the example of the local council, imagine you're a local council that's trying to get a leisure centre through. You want a new leisure centre. It's been 4 years of hard political fight with the central government to get the funding for it.
Sun indoors.
Yeah, yeah.
All under one
all
roof.
All under one roof. Sunshine indoors. On the one roof. Sunshine indoors. But the point is that a lot of people, say if you were a community action group trying to fight local migrant housing, your local council go, well, if we rock the boat on this... we won't get the leisure centre. And it's those kind of things where HS2 is another example where you have this bloody mindedness and actually a large amount of political capital is spent on HS2, but they forget to actually turn it into a railway.
Well, this is part of the thing I was saying earlier on, because HS2 isn't just a simple task. Let's say, for example, you have to rehouse people out of a Hindu old folks home into an area that's occupied by Muslims.
Yes.
Now, instead of just building a railway, you've now got a sort of rigmarole and possibly a several years long arbitration process of doing bargaining amongst a multi-ethnic conflict zone in the middle of a British town centre. So it's no wonder that the railway doesn't get built, because you're too busy dealing with a 1,500-year-old blood rivalry between people who don't come from here.
Unforeseen consequences.
Exactly. Well, just Harry, just stunned.
No, I suppose that's my point as well here, which is that the decisions that were made to lead us to this point are part of the incompetency that I see, or at least part of the malevolent evil will that has drawn us to where we are, which is the elites of yesteryear, if they truly knew what they were doing, were even more evil bastards, because they also condemned their own successors to the misery of trying to manage multi-ethnic society as well. And if they weren't, then it just means that they were so stupid as to not realize that importing the rest of the world's conflicts onto one small island was not going to end very well for anybody.
Yeah, and I think to quickly... sort of wrap that point up, because it relates to a super chat that Wild Blue, or whoever that is sent us there. Do you believe Ed Dutton's thesis that dysgenics is the single biggest problem to civilized society? Love the streams, all hail the sons of Judea. Well, we would probably go one further than dysgenics. I know I would anyway. I would just say the fact that entropy is the single problem that the human condition has to deal with. And this fundamentally comes back to almost the question that you're answering there, Harry. Is entropy a consequence of the expression of human will, or something that happens despite it?
Or because of a lack of it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
is it a consequence of it, or does it happen despite it? You know, can you will prophecy into action, or does prophecy happen despite will?
It's a very deep question. Anyway, oh, man.
Oh. Yeah, I think... Again, we're all just trying to figure this out, because we only have... part of the puzzle. All we have access to is at most a third of the jigsaw puzzle, and all the rest of the pieces are being hidden doors that we don't have access to.
Oh, but we've tried,
but the what we do see, and what you've pointed out, and what you were exasperated by, and what we get exasperated by as well, is the visible incompetence. The way we try and square that circle, and it's a difficult one, is that a ruthless class of political climbers is not necessarily technically competent.
No.
Being able to wield power doesn't make you able to design a building, and yet politicians have these delusions that they are able to manage these disparate areas of society with which that they can't have knowledge by virtue of being political, you know, politicos.
Well, and I think, and the inverse point you're making here as well, though,
yes,
is that people who are
technically competent aren't necessarily politically competent. Yes.
Yes.
And where the two collide is where you have the most pettiness and waste.
And this accompanied with essentially a simple lack of care. Where there are competent people in positions, they often simply just don't care. They're incentivized to keep their head down, to nod along, and to run out the clock for their pension. Caring is dangerous. On the rare occasions someone in the power structure demonstrates genuine care, they're often hounded out. Or found to be a paedophile, or, you know, whatever else to make sure that they're no longer seen anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's another factor in all of this, which is my theory of the political sexual blackmail.
This is partly what I was hinting at with initiation earlier.
Well, introduced to the pig, as it were.
a lot of political action, I think, that comes across as completely nonsensical is just, well, they've got dirt on me.
Yep.
So I better do it.
There's also this aspect as well. So I'm trying to rush through this. Not rush through. I get through this a little bit of page. That they view science as magic. The managerial class, as an increasingly non-technical class, view science, and especially fashionable popular science, like green science, as magic. Since the end of World War II, those in charge of social organizations see science as an endless pool of problem-solving arcana that can dig them out of any hole, which has led to the class of appointed court scientists and technocrats, a solution of rule by experts often posited by leftist ideas, which, you know, people, you're not democratic, really. Well, no shit, they have to run a country.
Yeah.
Scientific government and the myth of scientism as an objective neutral government are the outward faces of this.
No one complains that we don't elect generals, do they?
No. Do you think that the current ruling global elite have sniffed their own farts effectively? Especially on scientific kind of the science is settled stuff.
I think that there's a lot of their ideology where the elites that are in charge now, I do believe that we over-index on true believers. Whereas before, you would want these people who would project a certain ideology, and that what you would want the Tony Blairs, who's basically a chameleon when it comes to ideology and can shift form that he needs to. Right now, I do think that some of the people in charge really believe their own lies and have absorbed it. The ideology of never again has pushed people into some pretty absurd beliefs over the past 80 years, and I don't know. Without a complete circulation of elites, how that changes.
I was going to add, though, to that, fair enough, we have, you know, issues like never again or the acceptance of civil rights, and these are, you know, concrete elements of kind of the status quo. But I think when people refer to ideology specifically in this instance, there is a... there is an assumption that people make that it's the radical stuff. That's the problem. It's the woke stuff, or it's you know, BLM or whatever low hanging fruit people can pick as an example of zealotry. But really, I think the true ironclad zealotry exists more with the neoliberal base,
the objective neutral government part. Yes,
the idea of neutral institutions, or you know, the process. The fact that law is as written and we all live under the same law. Those people who genuinely believe those liberal priors, I think, are fundamentally more dangerous than some of your woke folk.
Yes.
Because ultimately, the people who believe in these hardcore liberal priors adopt much more important positions. They have a lot more say, a lot more weight behind what they do in their actions. And to a certain extent, their beliefs are more hardcore and more dyed in the wool than someone who is a radical communist today, a neoliberal tomorrow, and
centre-right pundit.
Centre-right, you know, yeah, conservative or reformed, born-again Christian in their 40s.
Yeah.
Of course. When I refer to ideology, what I suppose I'm speaking about is the general consensus that has been formed in the post-World War II order, not the more radical stuff that's popped up in woke ideology since the 1990s.
No, because I think you did that.
Woke ideology, for one, issues the blank slate, whereas the World War II, post-World War II order rests on blank slatism. And I think blank slatism is actually far more dangerous in its consequences than whatever BLM were advocating for, which was basically a form of black separatism.
Yes.
I'm going to do a moment of gay streamer shit and just say, do interact with the videos if you enjoy them. There'll be a reminder at the end, but do interact with Al Gore's rhythms. Do leave a like. I know it's cringe to say, but it does actually make us able to be seen.
Yes. Harry, are you a fan of Al Gore's rhythms?
I'm a fan of all music.
But what about specifically Al Gore's rhythms?
Well, of course, being that would be classified under all music, I must be.
Ah, well, of course, yes.
Well, we all dance on YouTube to Al Gore's rhythms. I'll switch some points around here before getting to performative failure stuff, but it follows on here that the other aspect is that they operate this giant bureaucracy they often don't pay full attention to, and often inherited. Apathy is supplemented by ignorance. Many of the current elite inherited the parts of the managerial machine that they run, and they do not understand it. They excel at defending their own positions, being occupied by incompetent... they excel at defending their positions and positions below them being occupied by... Sorry, I'm getting this wrong.
Occupied by incompetent people
in you.
To I demonstrate
in
loyalty.
Loyalty. There we go. Yeah, if you put someone in a position of power, even though they're incompetent, to display loyalty in a power politics sense, that's actually a strength in certain cases. In power politics, this demonstrates strength, not weakness, but it is entropic. And within a technical system, I got my words so confused there. In a technical system, you, as you said earlier, they are selecting more for loyalty than they are for competence, and that seems to be where you get the most tension in that they are having to consume a lot of internal energy, like an engine that has to put more and more percentage of its energy in to keep running, to just simply overcome their internal inertia as a class. They have to keep expending more energy to tread water.
I mean, this is almost pretty much spot on the bargain, I think, that the sort of theosphere, Elon Musk, wider sort of group are trying to engage with, which is turn round to what's left of the competent boomer elites and go, look, we know you want to put your children, your people in power, but those people are idiots. So how about you take a gamble with us Gen X sort of types, give your regime a new face, and we'll run it how you ran it before, but it'll just be a little bit better, but you've got to trust us. And essentially, I think it's that question, isn't it? Is it? Are current elites willing to gamble that Musk and co. and whoever else are loyal to the fundamental principles that they are? And I think on a grand scale, they probably are.
What do you think, Harry? Do you think there is genuinely a counter-elite out there that is visible? Or do you think that all the visible aspects we see, like Elon Musk, are as captured and totalized by it as everyone else's?
I fall more on the second option that you've given there. Elon Musk and Thiel, if they do represent a true counter-elite, have far too much in common in the base ideologies that they present with the elite that already exist. I can't say for certain. Elon Musk, of course, earlier on this year went on his little interesting under, I don't know, Steve Saylor posts on Twitter, but then he was immediately taken to Auschwitz so that Ben Shapiro could glare at him. So I think he and he's outright come out and said that he is a philo Semite, so I feel like his allegiances are pretty clear in that direction. and their goals tend to be more towards blank slateism, belief in neoconservatism, and a genuine multiculturalism, which of course is completely impossible, but that's what makes it all the more dangerous. Back to French Prince, Fresh Prince, not French Prince.
Hey, we could
it's a Will Smith.
We'll just hand Britain over to who's left of those old Norman aristocrats, whoever those people could be.
Right.
But I think there was
it's the same with Tucker Carlson. As much as he may interview really figures, create a lot of controversy.
You're cutting out a little bit there. Oh, you come back. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. As much as Tucker Carlson may interview very interesting and controversial people, his own personal stated beliefs are that he wants to return to, I think, 1992.
I believe he said 1993.
1 year off.
No. He actually said, yes, I want to return to 1993. He actually basically said return to Fresh Prince. It was amazing.
But yeah,
he wanted to make sure he had In Utero.
Yes. But there's a fundamental point, which is if these tech bros are a quote-unquote counter-elite, show me where they compete, and I will show you how that's actually them complementing the regime that sits now.
Yeah. Yeah, mostly. They do seem to serve a function, especially. Musk, he absorbs a lot of subsidies.
But
aspect I wanted to cover with this is performative failure.
Mm.
Those in power will pretend to undertake programs contrary to their interests, only to demonstrate the failure of those ideas, often ideas that are that have functioned uncontroversially for hundreds of years, like having a border. It's another layer to this is how much of the quote-unquote incompetence is them going, oh, well, we tried what you wanted to do and it didn't work.
Well, this is basically what Boris Johnson came out with recently with his memoirs and the interviews that he's done off the back of his memoirs, where he said, well, we had Brexit, but then also I did shut the country down and flood the economy with loads of artificial money. So I had to import 400,000 people in because Brexit wouldn't have worked otherwise and we'd have too much inflation.
Mm. Well, I was going to make a suggestion because there's quite a bit of notes we've got left here, and I know you are wanting to wrap up relatively soon so we're not streaming across too many people. I think if we've got the time to do so again, we might want to revisit this.
Somewhat.
I think we could...
We've not got too much left to get through.
Instead of rushing what we've got here, because I think some of what we've got for the rest of the notes would be very nicely complemented by some examples or more particulars.
Okay.
And it just gives us an excuse to have Harry on again.
Possibly at some point.
Not that I'm saying we're ending the stream.
We might actually. I wrote far too many notes. It was just to try and get my own thoughts down in a logical.
But order. I don't want to barrel through all this and then miss some good conversation that we could be having out of it.
Oh no. What I would say then is for the last kind of 15, we'll aim to finish about 5:30 as we usually do. But the last little while of the stream, I was wondering if you had, and I guess we can go open to the audience as well. Do send in your super chats, send in your the Ko-Fi stuff. If you have any kind of questions and holes, do you think from you've seen a lot of our content, a lot of people have seen a lot of our content. Where do you think the holes are in our kind of map of the elite? Because we were described by somebody who does work behind the curtain as having painted a relatively, there's the people who are feeling the elephant. There's the myth of like the blind people feeling the elephant. And he says it, it looks like an eel. One of them says it's got a giant leg. It must be like a giant bike. They don't know the shape of the elephant. But what he said is we have guessed the elephant relatively well, but it's very, very, it is like that. It is, as you said, like groping around in the dark. And we've seen behind the curtain a little bit, but we don't have the best picture. So I was wondering what would be your kind of major questions about the framework we've tried to bring up here, because it's completely counter to mainstream politics in an almost complete inversion way, but it has these little twists in it, I think, that even we struggle to articulate sometimes. So to end my little ramble here, what we do wrong, how we see elite wrong.
I suppose I'll throw a question out. Do you reckon they have any backup plans for if, as a result of all of the failures of their governance, things do just fall apart more rapidly than they expect? say the monetary system becomes too much to handle and we reach hyperinflation.
They put us in charge and we bungle it all for them, and then they get to come back looking like legitimate leaders.
Do you reckon that's what they would actually
do? My first instinct, me putting my Machiavellian head on, if I thought it was all going to come apart at the seams and I needed someone to pin it on, I would kill two birds with one stone and I would pin it on the one group of people who I would see best to also get rid of at the same time.
What happens is what happened to Gordon Brown is that the visible elite will hand off a bomb to their, you know, to their subordinates, and they will let that bomb go off. And they will move themselves, like Tony Blair did, into a position where they are insulated from the political consequences of that. There's been a lot of cases. Jacinda Ardern was one of them. What happens when they encounter a real problem is, like with the lockdowns, and like when they nearly broke basically the entire Western system by going, no, we're still doing lockdowns. Oh, shit, it's breaking everything. Oh, okay, forget about that one. Hmm. Often they will actually just course correct and not talk about it.
I mean, Sunak.
Yeah, Sunak.
I'm more considering something even more catastrophic than that. Let's say they seem to have this incredible desire to, no matter what, push through the net zero 2030 goals. If that goes through, and to ensure that they don't have any carbon emissions, as they're trying to do in Ireland and parts of Wales, kill off a load of the livestock, and they've not yet developed the artificial food production techniques to be able to manufacture fake meat on a mass scale, or the kind of scale that they would need, and all of a sudden the lights don't switch on anymore. What happens then? And do you have any idea why it is that they are so eager for net zero?
Net zero is the method for containing and engaging all this stuff. Why not bring in your own system of rationing energy before the issue of rationing energy actually comes to the head?
Yes. What we've come to see is that net zero is an ideological veneer over the fact that those in charge of projections and management, in almost like a Soviet sense, it is very, we have cut your vodka ration, comrade. What happens is that you have supermarkets that don't have food in them. People simply go hungry. People simply go and hunt wild animals even. We're going to, I'll do it with a spoiler, we're going to have somebody on Monday where we talk about the fact that what we think of as unthinkable,
as the bottom of the fucking pile, isn't.
It really isn't. And if you look at Mexico, if you look at Venezuela,
Greece,
if you look at Greece, if you look at Libya, you can just have a failed state.
And it will just persist.
And what happens is these elites remove themselves from it. They go to their internationalist headquarters, they go to Zurich, they go to Davos, they move away from these places and they think, right, how can, you know, they drive past the fire and they go, how can this fire benefit us? But if it really was the big one, in quotes, if there really was a collapse, I said it during the COVID stuff, but if it was the real big one, we wouldn't see these people.
No.
They'd be absent. We would be bereft of our leaders because they'd be in their bunkers. And if it gets bad enough, they can, it's in our notes here, they can just go off to their private Epstein island. A lot of these people are hoping to be dead before it hits. Their plan is to die or be so insulated from it that to them it does not exist.
Well, I just think it's fantastic. You take what looks like and feels like a failed state, but what you call it is environmentalism. So that as you approach a failed state, you convince the populace that actually they're becoming better environmentalists or better communists or better fascists even. Whatever ideological flavour your journey to collapse is taking, and then by the time you reach the utopia at the end, you can't really tell whether or not you're, like, in heaven or in a pigsty, because it's all just become a sort of political propaganda mess around it.
It's also like if somebody came to us, like, 40 years ago and went, well, what if wages remain stagnant in real terms, but house prices quadrupled in real terms. Wouldn't that be an intolerable disaster? How would the elite explain that?
But everyone enjoys it now because then they get a more expensive house every 10, 15 years and they trade up and they get a cheap mortgage. So actually, they've taken something that is a complete and utter failure and turned it into a benefit.
South Africa is an example of this as well. There are levels of survival the elite are willing to expect. Mm. They have done this many times and they have become very, very good at it.
I suppose then, if I can go back to net zero, it seems, despite that, a little bit chicken and egg. Because I suppose net zero accelerates that process. So by making the energy crisis worse, by making it more expensive, by making the energy that we have available to us less efficient. So are they willing to put up the veneer even at the cost of accelerating the crisis? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. No, it's that I don't even necessarily suggest, I wouldn't even go as far as saying whether or not they're accelerating the crisis actually matters, because it just exists anyway. That's the fundamental fact. And what they are using...
When would you pin down to the crisis emerging
entropy.
In that case?
It's entropy. It has to happen. It's the only fundamental fact of existing. For something to exist, for something to be living, be that a person or a polity, it must at some point die.
The issue is that they have kind of frozen the energy infrastructure in amber in 1945.
Mm.
And that what happened was they went, right, we have these effectively state-run energy producers in all the West. You effectively have to get permission from the state to generate electricity. We have all these systems and they will provide for us forever. But they have not provided for us. And to slightly differ, I think that, yes, they are willing to... exacerbate the crisis as long as they can portray the crisis as part of the plan.
Or either one, not their fault, or two, the thing that I think is fundamentally more important than maybe even the crisis itself, if they can get ahead on framing it and developing social systems for moderating the reaction to it. I mean, this is what the woke, the culture war is in some regard, isn't it?
Yes.
It's them developing systems of basically multi-ethnic conflict resolution before it gets too bad. I mean, we are, as I've said a number of times, on the road to white civil rights, and it will look like a victory to a lot of people. And in a certain regard, I think you could almost make the argument that woke was put out there as such an obvious and glaring sort of fault. Only in that nature were we then willing to respond to it. If it had remained the sort of Fresh Prince, 90s-style, more neutral, quote-unquote, multiculturalism for that entire 30-year period, white people, by the time the sort of multiracial conflict, if it does happen, wouldn't even be able to sort of be G'd up into action because they weren't engaged with it.
I think as well it is also about having a crisis.
Mm.
The current elite love a good crisis.
Oh, well, because they get to declare when they happen and when they stop.
there's almost like a sense of boredom out there. But to get to your net zero thing again, it's something I've slightly inverted my thinking on. The way that net zero is portrayed is that the managerial class have the ability to give us infinite cheap energy via fossil fuels in a managed manner. And that they are choosing not to. But what I think is, the reality is that they do not have the ability, as these all-powerful managers, to give us infinite cheap energy. And therefore, what they are moving into is energy rationing. And they are using the environment, essentially, as an excuse for objective reality. It's a little... I don't know, something I've tried to explain to people...
It's a very basic, almost market dynamic. You want to develop a system of rationing and management of the quantity of a resource that you have before it becomes a problem. Because by the time it has become a problem, it's too late to start engaging in the rationing process.
Also, it just further politicizes the energy system.
Well, that too.
Everything, the revolution must be never-ending, comrade, and that is another frontier. And really, if they... The problem is that what you're talking about is how they respond to the big one, isn't it, really? It's how they respond to, like, energy grid collapse. But what really happens is what happened in Sri Lanka is that you have a temporary crisis and then the bits of the managerial world that are, quote-unquote, doing okay all come in and pretend to solve it. Or at least they stabilize it.
What?
They can inject food aid. They can inject, you know, kind of the UN tents. They can make things livable in a humanitarian sense. And they love doing that. They love destroying these places and putting a UN aid band-aid over them.
Well, I was going to say, is that as an addendum to this, if we are talking about the big one, you know, waking up tomorrow morning and there is no electricity, there is no running water, and there's nary a Tesco or a Sainsbury's open, and there is no food, it's not a question of what are the elites going to do about that. It's a question of what are you going to do about that? Because in that situation, you've become your own elite, or you've at least got the opportunity to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you saying you'd wake up in the collapse and go, ah, yes, warlord time?
No, not necessarily, but I'm suggesting more that...
Not warlord necessarily.
Disavow.
It might cross my mind.
When the big one happens, their response will be irrelevant.
Yes.
And that's how you know it's the big one.
Yeah.
It's self-affirming, but this is, I think, the way we have to look at these things. And it's the way I've always taken it, as it's when push comes to shove. It's not as it is now. It's gun to your head, yes or no.
Sorry, we've probably over answered that. Do you have any other kind of questions or comments? Because we have talked a lot throughout this, so do go ahead there.
That's all right. I'm mainly here to try and get a bit better perspective on these questions, because again, I'm grasping in the dark as many people are, and I want a better
understanding.
Just to respond to the answers that you were giving me there, I will say the general answer of entropy seems a little bit broad and unsatisfying to me. And the other answers that you gave, again, it seems unsatisfying, mainly because of the fact that by accelerating and making the situation worse, a lot of the energy problems that we could be facing in the near future seem completely avoidable. I know, obviously, infinite energy for cheap is not available perpetually, won't be available forever. But it seems completely arbitrary for me that they would set the targets for 2030 and then also ignore the fact that we do still have plentiful resources to be able to extract cheap energy for ourselves.
Where's your 1.5 million man strong workforce that's going to pull the coal out of the ground?
The problem that we've had is that, especially in the West, that methods of extracting fossil fuels in Western nations have kind of failed. The economics of them stop making sense within, like, a social safety net system. And so they have to move to this almost performative energy grid. What we'll really see, actually, is coal and oil still. They'll just burn it and say they're not doing it. And we see that in Germany. Mm. We see that throughout Europe, is that Germany is burning massive amounts of gas and coal and just saying that they're not. And Britain is importing massive amounts of gas and coal energy from the continent via being hooked up to it, and just saying that they're not, or they're importing goods increasingly. Really what we see is that they are able to adapt to any situation. It's like a kid who falls off their bike and says, meant to do that. When we have a lot of these disasters, they'll go, well, we meant this to happen, and here's why we meant this to happen. And a lot of what they do, I think, is quite reactionary in terms of to events. But the problem is that the people believe they're in power. They believe they're in charge. So the reaction becomes the official reaction. And then the unthink, you know, what is it? The Ted Kaczynski quote about conditions that are thought of as intolerable to the human spirit, you know, have been tolerated and will be tolerated again.
Mm.
And that really is the crux of it. That you will become poorer, but when the managerial class fails, it's like, well, what are the plebs going to do about it?
Yes. I will add one thing. I have linked it in the chat, and I will possibly also make a post about it, because I think at some point a while ago we sort of unlocked it as a paid post. My pitch for the Witan in 2023 was basically an entire, like, massive essay on entropy in regards to technology, technical skills, and polities in general. So I would recommend anyone who thinks my reference to that is a bit abstract and sort of nebulous, that do go and read that if you want to know my context on it, at least.
The other part of it would be that the reaction to net zero going a bit sideways, but it will be the reaction to the lockdowns going a bit sideways, and that they'll just cause...
Too little, too late.
Yeah, they'll be too little, too late. Things will get worse, but they'll semi-course correct and just pretend it didn't happen. I believe if it becomes an immediate existential threat to them keeping the lights on for things that they care about, they will try and course correct it. Whether they can... is a complete...
It doesn't matter that the power's gone out. KSI's just released a new Prime Energy bar. You know, none of it fucking matters.
Again, Venezuela is quite a good example of that, and we'll be coming onto some of that on Monday. That might be a bit of a hat tip to who our guest is.
But I reckon we've got the rest of the notes there. We could stick some examples in as well. Maybe if you want to send us some stuff our way, we could sort of reconvene at some point in a month or so and carry on this. Because I think...
Yes.
As a question to continue ruminating upon, I think this is possibly one of the most important. I believe you are quickly wanting to hand off to some folk on the way out.
I was going to hand off to Broken Crown on YouTube. Spoon and Aiden's channel will be starting streaming in a few minutes, I believe. Yes, I do have.
They're not waiting on us, are they?
No, they're not waiting on us. They tend to run a little bit late anyway. They're not as punctual. No one can be quite as punctual as we are. But until we've got a couple. Is there anything
dare
you want
I say,
to
say? Shots fired.
Never late. Never black-pilled. Never again.
Yes, I will say as we're handing off here, Harry, is there anything you want to shill or anything you want to add before we depart here?
Obviously go to Lotus Eaters. I've just recently finished recording 3 episodes, the final parts of a series on the films of Stanley Kubrick with Josh and Proper Horror Show. So they'll be coming out once they've been fully edited. Other than that, I'm working on a very large project going into what actually happened at Stonewall, which is probably going to be about 2, maybe 2.5 hours long. So that should be fun. So if you want to keep up with all of that content, you can follow me over at Lotus Eaters. Give us a subscribe so that I can be paid more money.
Hooray! I'll get that quickly up on screen there. You can see Harry over in the Lotus Eaters. You've got a...
I need to update that picture. I fucking hate
that. Sorry, it is your file photo. Oh, sorry, that's just...
I know, don't put the fucking...
putting the DMs on screen.
DMs on screen.
You are absolutely not the professional that you pretend. No. He's done it again!
It's mostly us just sending you the thing about the links. But God, why is it doing that? That's so stupid.
Sorry, I probably just ruined everyone's so ears.
Maybe we should ask the microphone there.
There's nothing. To be fair, there's nothing in. The, I don't actually talk in.
I'm gonna reference all the way back to one of the first lines said during this stream.
Yes.
When you said yous are both retarded, you really were speaking for yourselves.
Yeah, I don't know why I did that. Anyway, I was just gonna get yours.
I didn't say I was retarded. I said I'm
leaking the DMs.
Ah, fucking whatever you want to call it, you special snowflake. I'm not retarded. Kids. I'm autistic. It's different.
Our DM is mostly here's the link to where we're streaming and also Henlo.
Yeah, yes. Henlo, goodbye. Go to the pub. I don't know. Buy us pints of Theakston's if you wish.
Yes. I've also decided to. We've got you all here on the end screen once again. Yes. So,
because, of course, we'll.
Here I am. I'm sneaking up on you.
Yes. Yeah.
You guys are enjoying the collapse, and I'm about to eat you both.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're going to bring his civilization and society back, you vile heathen.
All right, anyway, I'm going to play some of the ending music here, and I'll say goodbye, guys. Goodbye.
Goodbye.